Today is Wednesday. It's October 20th, 2021. It's 1:38 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Hansen. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record on Wednesdays. You can listen to me on WGN Radio weekdays from 9 to noon.
I'm Lisa Donovan with the Chicago Tribune.
I'm Heather Sharon of WTTW News.
I'm Austin Burt from the Illinois Policy Institute.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the eerily prescient publisher and proprietor of the Picayune Sentinel.
What are you bragging about there, Eric?
Well, last week, regular listeners will know that I bragged about having picked the Astros in four over the White Sox. This wasn't my preference, but I forecast it. And sure enough, the Astros won in four. And then we were kicking around the Sky series that had just started. And I said the Sky were going to win in four games. And so I'd like to join the DraftKings team and start making money on sports gambling, I think.
Wow. That's a moderately impressive, but somebody has to win it in four, five, six, or seven. So it's one of four.
Actually, someone has to win it in three, four, or five.
Three, four, or five. So it's really a flip of the coin would have got that right after a couple of flips, right, Eric?
Well, and I believe when, at the time we taped it, the Sky had already won one game. So, it wasn't like one of those one in a million shots. But I thought the Sky just had it going on. It just looked like a fun team. They were playing well together. They really liked one another.
Yeah.
And boy, they were fun to watch, huh?
So what did you, by the way, we'll start on the tangent, as is your wont, Eric. What did you make of the mayor not wearing a mask in that screenshot that she shared on her own Twitter account? And boy, you talk about optics. What a bad, dumb move on her part. What was your take on that?
Well, you know, bad optics have really done in politicians before. Gavin Newsom almost got recalled in California because he didn't wear a mask and went to a fancy restaurant during the pandemic when he was telling everyone else to stay inside. Last year, Mayor Lightfoot got a lot of grief for that picture she took with her hairdresser after she was telling people to stay inside and not do things like get their hair done. I thought it was a really, really strange decision on her part. First of all, to not wear a mask when everybody else there was wearing a mask. Chance was wearing a mask. All the people around on the perimeter, all people with the mayor, I believe.
Yeah, everybody in that picture or immediately around her had a mask on. There she was at the championship game for the Chicago Sky, and she was sending out a congratulatory tweet. She did not have a mask on, nor was one visible on her person. And she could have had an instant where she took it off to cheer, smile, whatever, but how did that get shared on her own Twitter page?
But then her own social media team.
Yeah.
Put it on, or maybe she did herself. Maybe she thought it was a particularly flattering photo. I thought it was politically one of the more tone deaf things that she has done, among many tone deaf things.
Heather, did anybody get a chance to ask her about that?
No. She hasn't taken questions, especially at a time when she's under fire from the police union for being hypocritical. And the mayor's social media strategy, I think, is very different than Rahm Emanuel's social media strategy was, and can both benefit her and cause her unforeseen problems.
Her social media campaign through the pandemic has really had some highs and lows, right? The guy on the horse.
His proper name is the Census Cowboy, excuse me.
And then other times they did things right, but boy, was that a misfire. The mayor of Chicago wants all city employees to get vaxxed or at least tested regularly, and she wants those 30,000-some employees to upload their status to a city portal. And in some city departments, we hear compliance approaches 100%. Not so the city's police department. About 65% of the city's officers have responded in the portal, putting the jobs of maybe 35% of the force in jeopardy. Anticipating a shortfall, surrounding county sheriffs have said, don't ask us for any help. I guess the blue line in Chicagoland is not so thin. And one last note about all of this game of chicken the mayor's playing with the union. DuPage County Sheriff James Mendrick said to us today on the radio that the responsible thing for him to do as a sheriff is to keep deputies on the street. And he estimated he'd lose about 30 employees if he mandated a vaccine. So the best way for him to serve and protect with the maximum manpower is to not mandate vaccination. Austin, what's your read on that?
To me, again, this is sort of a problem in Chicago where we have political policing and not professional policing. I would put this under that category. If we care about public safety improvements, we should look at our work plan to improve public safety, and we should really focus on that. Of course, like this whole political thing with vaccines, it's very, I think it reveals how government unions in Illinois have too much power, and the fact that someone like Catanzaro has power over, you know, duly elected officials, I think is ridiculous. But I also think there's going to be a federal mandate that clears a lot of this up pretty quickly, because Chicago Police Department has far more than 100 employees.
There's no mandate.
But right now we're not talking about the fact that there's no performance reviews online for police officers. There's no electronic time tracking. There's no system to judge whether training is effective or not. There's so many things wrong with the police department. But this is going to be the discussion, I think, for the next like 2 or 3 weeks, this vaccination debate.
Well, I think you got that right. Lisa, are you hearing anything about the timeline on this and what's going to happen next? I mean, if I had to bet on one of these horses, I'd say the mayor is going to win.
Most of these folks do not want to lose their jobs. I mean, that's just a bet. If that's her winning, then I guess so. It seems like it's sort of another chapter in sort of these really awful and fraught political times where we're battling over things that have nothing to do, and Austin gets at some of this, have nothing to do with public safety and their own safety. I know the union president has given an explanation. I don't understand it for not following through on this. It just seems we're at loggerheads over things that neither side really now can explain fully.
I would put it to the sheriff of DuPage County that if their job is to protect the public, then part of that job is to help curtail this dreadful pandemic. The other thing is that they are also, police officers are often in very close contact with the public. It's not just, I mean, they're in their faces, they're grabbing them sometimes. It's not like they're across a countertop or something, like an employee at the Secretary of State's office or something. So if your mission is really to protect the public, then you're job, it ought to be part of your responsibility, is to do that act which is going to protect the public from this pandemic. And so this idea that he's got to put the most people on the street as possible, you could use that argument to put, you know, make, to deputize convicted felons and put them out there. I mean, maybe they would do a good job. To my mind, he's got this all backwards in terms of what his mission is of protecting the public.
The Kane County Sheriff Ron Hain, he also was sort of weighing in on this as sort of a political thing. He all but called Lori Lightfoot a lousy mayor. He said that, you know, that this was created by poor government and a lack of support the officers and received. And then it sort of, that's what he told the Tribune. And then it went off from there that, you know, these are global issues about law enforcement.
So I asked the mayor, who has cast this vaccine mandate as a way to keep Chicagoans safe from contracting COVID, how she can continue her efforts and to fulfill her promise that she made during the 2019 campaign to sort of restore Chicagoans' trust in the Chicago Police Department. Because I think it's really easy to lose sight of the fact that for a long time, the level of trust among Black and Latino Chicagoans in the police department is very, very low. And so if what Mayor Lightfoot's trying to do outside of a COVID context is restore that trust, and you have literally thousands of officers who are not only refusing to get vaccinated, but they're refusing to even tell the city whether they're vaccinated, you know, that raises a question for me. Is that even a possible thing that the mayor could accomplish? And, you know, she basically just threw up her hands and said, yeah, that's a really good question. And then she took it one step further and said, you know, if you are unwilling to get vaccinated and you're a police officer in Chicago, you're welcome to go find employment elsewhere. We only know that 54% of the Chicago Police Department is vaccinated right now. That means nearly half either is not vaccinated or doesn't want to tell the city that they are. So what happens on December 31st, which isn't that far away, and the mayor says, if you're not fully vaccinated by then, you're not only going to be disciplined, but you're going to be separated from the department. I think that's a much bigger question. While at the same time, we've seen in other settings, including hospitals and other municipalities, that the rate of people who will leave their job rather than getting vaccinated is somewhere in the neighborhood of 0.5%.
Well, I asked this question last week, and it still is on my mind. Do we know if you are fired for cause, you don't get to collect unemployment? So these men and women who are standing on principle, whatever weird principle that might be, who leave their departments over this, they are not going to be collecting unemployment checks. Is that correct? Is anyone?
If you're fired for cause, you don't collect unemployment.
Unemployment. I remember that was certainly an issue at the Tribune. That probably explains why. What did you say it was? 0.2%?
0.5%.
So that explains why that number is actually so low, that when people can huff and puff all they want, but then when it comes down to am I going to try to, you know, put food on the table and pay for my tuition and my car and my house and my rent and whatever, the people might decide, well, maybe I'll just get that vaccine anyway because it's safe and it's effective and I can do my Trumpy thing in some other way.
You're at risk of losing a very, very good pension on, you know, forget the unemployment, a very good pension. And so I think that's also going to be a factor in a lot of this and why you're going to see people mm-hmm. kind of come around.
Or that is, they'll upload their status?
Yeah, it was like this. And so there were 50 people who were going to be in the status, but now there's, what, 20-something?
But that number has to expand, right? We're talking about thousands of officers here if it's a percentage of the force.
This may come out to 50%. The last that I read was of the 12,000 department employees, which includes sworn officers and civilians, 68% had entered, right? 68% had entered their information into the portal.
Right.
That's what Police Superintendent Brown said, I think, yesterday. And of those employees, 82% are vaccinated.
Well, then they're doing it at a higher rate because originally we heard 65%, 54% of which said that they were vaccinated, mm-hmm. which means that you were only certain that 35% of the force had been vaccinated. Yeah. The numbers will probably grow in the city's favor, if you will, as time goes on. But isn't the sort of hook about this thing, it's not getting the vaccine or testing. It's the mandate that you upload it to the portal. That
right.
seems to be what has them exercised about all of this, which, boy, that's a funny hill to die on, if you ask me.
I don't know why we would take them at their word.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've heard various things from the president of the police union. When the mayor announced this vaccine mandate, it was, you know, he likened Chicago to Nazi Germany. And then he said, well, I shouldn't have said that. And then it wasn't, you know, and then he said, you know, well, we should be given the option to test if we're not vaccinated by the deadline. And then the mayor said, okay, great, I'll do that. I'll give you until December 31st. If you're not vaccinated, you can take a test twice a week until you can get vaccinated. And when that came out, that wasn't acceptable to the union. So then it was an argument about, like, well, why should I even tell you at all whether I'm vaccinated? The fact of the matter is that the U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly held that employers are allowed and permitted to require employees to be vaccinated against contagious diseases like COVID-19. We're talking about case law that goes back to the early 19th century.
So I would agree on this question of you know, what the principle is behind this. I think the principle is similar to MAGA merchandise that was very popular the second time around, was Trump 2020 because F you twice. The police department doesn't want to do anything that the city wants them to do, for many members, just because they don't trust them. And that trust has been completely been broken between police and the city. It's been completely broken between communities and police, which is, again, why I bring it back to that most of the consent decree is stuff that improves the lives of police officers by making their workplace more professional and supportive. And the further we get away from that, the worse this trust issue is going to get. And it's not just police. This happens. The CTU treats the mayor the same way. It treats the city the same way because there's no trust between them.
So John Catanzara told the union members, the police officers, I'm going to read from his email to the rank and file. He said, if you're asked about your compliance or your upload, you should say, I bring this up because you mentioned Trump, and this has the sort of capitalizations and punctuation that a Trump tweet would. It really does. Complying with this invalid order and the violation of my bargaining constitutional and civil rights has furthermore caused me severe anxiety while challenging both my religious and moral beliefs. I am, in fact, complying with this because I am being forced to do so under complete duress and threats of termination. I'm not sure what all of that means. It was so Trumpian, at least in the first half of that paragraph, with the sort of constitutional rights, capital C, capital B, bargaining, etc. Is this a Trumpian thing? Is this literally related to Donald Trump?
Yeah, all of this does seem Trumpian because Catanzara is pals with or has a good relationship. I don't know how you explain it with Trump. I mean, he was at one of his rallies. He's made it clear he's totally team Trump. We've reported that he apparently has told people to turn on officers to turn on their body cameras when they are being approached by supervisors about reporting this stuff. So
I think it's all about Trump. It's all about partisan politics. And I think that if Donald Trump had been reelected, he would have realized that the interest of the economy would have made him promote this vaccine that he would have then taken a lot of credit for, and he would have deserved some credit for it. He would have said, you know, it was my accelerated initiative that got the vaccines done as quickly as they were done. And I'm guessing that red state America would have rushed to the doctor to get the jabs in the arms. Blue state America might have been more reluctant. Kamala Harris famously before the election said that if it was a Trump vaccine, she probably wouldn't get it. But that I think this is so colored by politics, and that it is still, we're still in a situation where if Donald Trump were to come out tomorrow and say, get the vaccine, you knuckleheads, let's get through this. But he doesn't say it, and I think in part he doesn't say it because he wants Joe Biden to fail, and he wants the public to blame Joe Biden for the Delta variant, for the fact that we don't have this pandemic under control, and we're creeping up on 2 years of restricted lifestyle, and that ultimately the Democrats are going to pay the price for it. And I think that's ironic. But why else would Fox News be urging people or telling people, suggesting that they not get the vaccine? That makes no sense. They're in effect killing off their viewers.
Neil Cavuto said this week he has COVID. He's been vaccinated, but he told viewers to get the vaccine.
I don't watch Neil Cavuto. I see little clips of Hannity and especially Tucker Carlson, and the skepticism that they are engendering about the vaccine is bizarre.
Yeah.
I would say it's criminal that people are listening to them and they're doing their own research and they're deciding not to get the vaccine and people are dying because of it. I don't know how else to put that. And I don't understand the demographic result of it, but I think that politically, they hope that things go badly. I mean, Rush Limbaugh famously said he did not want, who was Obama, I think, he didn't want Obama to succeed as a president. Basically, he wanted the country to have things go south so that Republicans could be reelected. I really believe that's what's going on here. Maybe not on the ground level where people are refusing to get the vaccine, but the people who are pulling these strings, who are getting this message out there that the vaccine isn't something you want to take, they're the ones who, I believe, want things to go badly. They want the coronavirus to keep spreading because they want to be able to use that against the Democrats in 2022 and beyond.
So
am I wrong? I think you're giving way too much
credit to Trump Nation. I think if Donald Trump said that, I don't think the red states would turn, Eric. Really, you think that he could turn the tide, that he could convince Catanzara and the Cook County Sheriff's Police or the DuPage County Sheriff to change their view on this thing?
He's convinced a whole raft of Republican lawmakers to change their tune about what happened on January 6th.
Okay.
Whatever Donald Trump says, the party just seems to fall in line behind him. If he were to get up and say, full throw away, look, get the vaccine. He did say at one point that he had gotten the vaccine, and then he said, oh, make up your own mind. People were booing him at one of his rallies.
I know.
Because it was already this toxic thing. But yeah, I really believe that if Trump were to decide, okay, I'm going to take credit for this, I'm going to get out and say, get the Trump vaccine, that his people would fall in line. People would make lines at the vaccination places, and that we would get out of this pandemic much faster. Because I think that all these people who are now, you know, Governor Abbott, all these people who are fomenting vaccine hesitation, reluctance, all those people would come around almost immediately because they do whatever Donald Trump says. And look at what the Republican Party has become. It's just a cult of personality.
I think in the case of the police, it's Trumpian in a deeper sense than actually Donald Trump, the politician, or the party that he represents. It's more about the fact that police officers, especially in Chicago, feel victimized and disrespected mm-hmm. by a large swath of people. And people like Catanzara come around and say, I'm going to speak like you and fight on your behalf and make all the right people mad who hate you and disrespect you. And he feeds that. I do think that is sort of at the core of a lot of this discord between the city and the police.
That's what unions seem to do these days. I mean, the CTU, and boy, we've had this conversation here before, and the Chicago police officers both seem to be so wrapped up in being strong unions, they don't pause to ask if what they're trying to be strong about is, in fact, helping their membership. I don't see how Catanzara's rhetoric or even the position of the officers is good for the officers. 90% of them are probably going to comply and keep their jobs by the end of the year. Not all of them have Kyrie Irving money. So they're going to want their jobs, right?
Well, I think Kyrie Irving's going to want his job ultimately.
Kyrie Irving is losing $350,000 a game for not playing basketball. But he's already got so many millions, he can afford to lose $350,000 a game. So, by the way, Heather, I cut you off a moment ago. You were going to say what?
Is what's happening in the Republican Party because of Donald Trump? Is he the source of this? Or is he a symptom of it? Is he an expression of something that would exist without Donald Trump? And I think there is a significant amount of evidence to suggest that this has very little to do with Donald Trump himself, only to the extent that Donald Trump has proven himself to be a master of being able to surf this sort of anti-democratic wave.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump did not invent the conspiracy, the false conspiracy that Barack Obama was not born in the United States. He did not invent a host of things, but he has shown himself particularly suited to be able to capitalize on those things. And I am not so quick as Eric is to dismiss the booing of the former president when he said, go get your vaccine. I think it shows that the president is captive of this sort of movement. Certainly they are loyal to him. That is only to a point. And these issues sort of transcends who he is.
I would challenge you to tell me something that Donald Trump could do or say that would cause his base to abandon him. I mean, you know, he...
Well, what you just said, I think, it wouldn't maybe cause them to abandon him, Eric, but it would not cause them to follow him. You really think that if Donald Trump said, everybody go get a vaccine, 30% of the people would turn like that?
I think a huge percentage of people would turn. I do. I think that the party is in lockstep behind him because it's fundamentally become a cult. It really is. And so that whatever he says is true. And if he says it's a lie, it's a lie. Right. Is there a counterexample you can think of? They booed him when he said he suggested to get a vaccine, but he didn't double down on it. He didn't risk any political capital by saying, look, you know, enough screwing around here. Let's get the vaccine. Let's get this over with. Let's get this country moving again.
He didn't say that.
I think that proves my point. I mean, he is not the one driving that interaction. So when he started the build the wall chant during the 2016 election, his staff came up with that for him so that he would remember, and this is based on reporting of the Washington Post, the New York Times, that he would remember to mention the wall on the southern border. And that every time that he would say that, he would get such a huge reaction and that he didn't have to be reminded to say it anymore. It is too simple of an explanation to say if this one person took this one action, then all of these other problems would go away and that it would be a less fraught time
right.
in American democracy.
He's the symptom, not the cause.
That's my point.
I'm on yes. Team Heather on this one. Austin, Lisa, pick a side. Who do you like better?
I do not think that my relatives in Nebraska are thinking, oh, if I don't get this vaccine, Biden will fail. No, that's not it. That is absolutely not it. That is not what they're looking at. They don't like Biden. They think he's a failed elected leader. Yeah, they're hoping sort of in 2024 that things go their way. But no, that has nothing to do with.
Oh, I agree with that, Lisa. I don't think that those people on the ground in red state America who aren't getting vaccinated feel that way. But I think the cynics at Fox News and the cynics in the Republican Party, the leadership of the Republican Party, do feel that way. They say if we can keep this pandemic going, then the economy is not going to roar back, and people are going to be really mad about having to wear masks, and they're going to blame it on the Democrats, and we'll get elected. We'll take control of the House and the Senate in 2022, and we'll get the White House back in 2024. I believe that at the upper levels, there is that sort of cynical manipulation going on. Otherwise, why would Fox News devote so much of its time to promoting vaccine skepticism? What is in it for them? They're all vaccinated there anyway. There's like Tucker Carlson. Those guys got vaccinated. They know. So what are they up to? They're playing to this base.
No, I think they're mentioning that because a large portion of their viewership is skeptical of the vaccine. That would be my. That's why they're mentioning it. And I don't know if it is as politically calculated. I think it's mostly that.
That's what politics is, right?
So I'm 4-1 against, but I just want to remind you guys who picked the Astros and the Sky.
Okay. All right. Well, the former Chicago mayor Rahm Emanuel wants to be ambassador to Japan because why not? At hearings today, he was grilled over his handling, and by that I might mean cover-up, of the Laquan McDonald police shooting, which took place 7 years ago today. You may recall McDonald was a 17-year-old black Chicagoan who was fatally shot 16 times by white Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke. Police descriptions were quite different from the video, which then-Mayor Emanuel said he had not seen. So his slow walking and talking about the case until after he won re-election makes him unfit for further public office, according to some aldermen and some other senators. What's the status of that? They haven't voted on his ambassadorship, have they?
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee will come back into session to consider his nomination at a yet-to-be-determined date. But today was the day for senators to question Emanuel.
Does it seem kind of random that he's going to be the ambassador to Japan? I mean, whatever.
He's pretty tight with, you know, he obviously served in the Obama-Biden administration. He was sort of a quiet advisor to Biden in his presidential bid. This is some political back scratching, right?
Yeah. I just don't know if I'd want it. I'd be like, yeah, thanks a lot, but I don't know. I'd want to be ambassador to Japan. What do I know about Japan? I don't speak Japanese. I haven't thought a lot about that. I guess if Pete Buttigieg can be in charge of transportation, Rahm Emanuel can be in charge of Japan. But okay, so
or is it a way for him to slowly reenter, political life? Who knows?
Okay, but answer this for me. Maybe Austin, you go first. Does his handling of Laquan McDonald discount his public service? Should that be a deal breaker?
I don't know about deal breaker, but yeah, it should absolutely be taken into consideration. And if he ran for mayor of Tokyo, it would come up. I'm of two minds on this. One, like in my opinion personally, what he did in the Laquan McDonald scandal is completely unforgivable as a public official. Then cynically, on sort of a realpolitik level, you kind of see the advantage of having someone as politically experienced and hardline and savvy as him defending American interests abroad. This similar, not to make a joke of this, but I thought for some period, if Mike Madigan was ever convicted of corruption by the federal government, you wouldn't have him serve prison time. You should make him the ambassador and chief negotiator with the Chinese Communist Party because he's the most effective politician in the history of state politics. There is something to be said when it comes to sort of this foreign there, but you have to also consider, right, that giving this position is a form of, it's an honorary sort of title, and you're lifting up this person as like sort of a paragon of virtue, which I do not think Rahm Emanuel has earned that.
Because of Laquan McDonald?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there are questions. I mean, he withheld, I'm sorry, his administration resisted releasing this police dash cam video, damning video, that would be used to convict a police officer who shot Laquan McDonald. He resisted, his administration resisted releasing it when he was in a tight race for re-election. You know, there are questions about why. Then sort of, what, weeks later, he releases it? I mean, so it has prompted conspiracy theories, I think rightly so. And this is public information. It should have been public information.
I agree. It should have been, and I believe the procedures have now changed such that it is public information. His explanation at the time was that this was not procedured. This is how they handled things. And I believe today during the hearings, he said, you know, you really don't want a politician making a decision about whether or not to release investigatory video like that. You want it done by the responsible parties. And the responsible parties in this case said no. And I don't know if you buy that. The other question I have about this is, why would it not have been to his advantage to have gotten out in front of this right away if he wanted to, right after the shooting, say, this is unacceptable, or I demand answers here. I'm joining those who are demanding answers from the police department. I don't know why that would have hurt him politically.
Do we know the answer to this question? Had he seen the video prior to the election? Was he aware of what was on that dash cam video before the election? Do we know the answer to that?
I don't think we know for sure. I think he says that he had not seen it. Right?
Which strains credulity.
Right. The reigning headline in the Tribune at one point was, what did he know and when did he know it? And I don't really feel like we've ever gotten a straight answer.
Nobody from his administration has come out, or from the police department, has said, I was in the room with him when he saw that video. I know he saw that video. Has anyone come out and said that? I don't think so.
I don't either. But
that wouldn't be his.
It is very peculiar that he would. But then again, you know, Steve Patton, his attorney, might have just decided that he was going to give Emanuel plausible deniability. Say, look, this is awful. I want to keep the mayor away from this. We'll settle with the family. They paid him $5 million, and they thought it was just going to go away.
And I think it would have if it wasn't for Jamie Gibson.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So,
there was initially, you couldn't get any information on it. Police would not release any information on the shooting itself. People were speculating for months.
Well, it still seems to me like the crime attached to Rahm Emanuel, especially if it's going to keep him from further public service, is, did he use the delay to get reelected? I mean, Rahm Emanuel wasn't the police officer on the scene, right? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how Rahm Emanuel is most culpable here. The worst of it would be if he saw the video before the election. And Heather, I asked you about this on the radio today. Didn't you infer that he has denied that he didn't see the video after the election?
Yes. He said he told the Senate today that he did not see the video until it was released publicly and the rest of us saw it.
And do you believe that?
He's been very clear on
it. Do you believe that?
So here's the issue, is that Rahm Emanuel was famous as mayor for being a micromanager, right? Ask any department head, ask any alderman, they will tell you that he called them at 5:30 in the morning to talk their ear off about tree trimming or pothole filling or insert, you know, narrow city government issue here, and that he was always very knowledgeable about what was going on in the city and he always had a plan. If that is true, which I have no reason to suspect it's not, you also have to believe that a 17-year-old black teen was shot 16 times by the Chicago police, and Rahm Emanuel, by his own account, did not ask for additional details. What Rahm basically said to the Senate was that, look, there were three parallel investigations going on. I didn't want to do anything to prejudice those investigations, mm-hmm. but I also did a bad job of understanding how angry Chicagoans, and specifically Black and Latino Chicagoans, are and were at the Chicago Police Department. And I didn't balance those competing issues. I did the best that I could. And I think any mayor of a major American city is struggling to deal with those issues. It is the implication of progressive lawmakers that, of course, Rahm Emanuel knew because he was a micromanager who knew everything. Sure, but we don't have any evidence to suggest that. I will say that it's sort of gotten lost in, you know, the craziness of the last couple of years, that it should not escape anyone's understanding that he announced that he would not run for a third term as mayor just weeks before a jury convicted Jason Van Dyke of second degree murder. There were many people when Jason Van Dyke went on trial, and I know Lisa wrote about this, that they expected him to be acquitted. They did. And, you know,
just because of the longstanding tradition, we tend to not see a lot of unrest in this city, and we don't convict police officers, which mm-hmm. is every city's sort of longstanding story, okay. right? It's just sort of how it is.
The idea that, oh, this, we're just letting the process work and this is completely apolitical is nuts. There, the city law department was negotiating what they were going to do with the family weeks prior to the runoff election. And Patton, the corp counsel, kept pressing for an arrangement that would keep the video under wraps until criminal charges, like until those were concluded. The day after Rahm won the runoff election, the law department softened that confidentiality provision. And then Patton went in front of city council and said everybody should vote to pay $5 million to the family. And no alderman had seen the video. So the timing of this was entirely political. And the mayor's, regardless of whether or not he saw it, his law department was making all of these moves through a political process
okay.
regarding whether or not the video was going to be.
Well, and also Anita Alvarez, who presumably looked into this, or the Cook County State's attorney at the time looked into this. She must have seen the video. She claims she didn't see the video. And then 2 days, what, it was the day or 2 days after the video is released publicly, charges are filed against Van Dyke. Yeah, the timing here is all really weird. We just don't have that sort of smoking right. gun account of Emmanuel.
He banged the gavel. Yeah, he banged the gavel on a $5 million settlement agreement, claiming he had not seen the video. So you're just going to pay them $5 million and you've never seen the video and you just think maybe it was really bad?
Yeah, and $5 million is a lot. I mean, it's obviously a lot of money to us on the panel, maybe not John Williams, but the rest of it. But that's even a lot by police violence standards, by those kind of settlement standards. That was a pretty significant settlement. And you're right, it is hard to believe that you would bang the gavel on a settlement like that without having seen the video and realizing that $5 million was probably a bargain, a real bargain, especially if it came with a string attached that says that this video will never get out.
Well, I don't like politicians to lie, especially about something like this, but justice wasn't denied. Isn't the great crime here that he made sure that video was not released until after the election so as to ensure that he got reelected? You all are talking as though the better play, the more ethical thing for him to do would have been to release the video in advance of the election, and I'm saying, think about what you're saying there. Justice wasn't denied. It was delayed. But you wanted Rahm Emanuel to go, boy, I better get this out before people get a chance to vote? I mean, yeah, who would have done that?
I definitely think so.
I want the information made public when it's appropriate. Election, no election, you know, Friday night, release the information. But the
you
foot
guys,
dragging on this
guys.
Was and the price tag that we residents of Chicago paid for Rahm Emanuel to keep that information under wraps. I'm sorry, I'm saying him, but it's his administration to keep that under wraps was huge. You can't tell me that there isn't some kind of correlation.
I am much more inclined to vote for someone for mayor who is quick and transparent and is on the side of justice and is willing to call out his or her police department right away when something like this happens and takes the side of transparency and inquiry. And I think if Emanuel had reacted quickly to the Laquan McDonald shooting and had come out and said, this doesn't smell right, we need to look into this, let's get this out there, I don't think he would have paid a price at the polls.
I'm persuaded, Eric, I'm with you, but I cannot believe that you think that if Rahm Emanuel had ensured that video got released prior to the election, that would not have cost him the election, that somehow he would have been able to use that as a measure of transparency and let's get the job done or whatever. That would have ruined his chances for re-election, and I'm not the cynic here, but I'm surprised that you think that he would go ahead and release that in advance of the vote.
I am ready to be outvoted 4-1 once again, but I think that it would have been much smarter for him, clearly in retrospect, but even at the time, if he had the right advisors, they would have said, hey, let's get out in front of this. Let's lead rather than follow this, the pursuit of justice.
Also, much different conversation now, right? If he wants to continue his political and financial career after that happens, like, hey, this terrible thing happened on my watch, I released it, then go for it. But now you're the guy who hid the video to get reelected. That's a very different conversation.
I think this whole debate, I mean, it's hypothetical, but it's somewhat making my brain hurt because it implies that a Chicago mayor could survive what we now know to be the murder of a black teen by a white officer. I find that hard to believe and somewhat disconcerting that we would be the kind of city where there wouldn't be massive recriminations.
But even in retrospect, we don't blame Rahm Emanuel for the death of Laquan McDonald. We don't really say like he's the one who created this environment that caused this to happen. We blame him. The blame that's going to him is covering it up, not being transparent, not being forthright.
I don't think that's true. I think there are plenty of lawmakers out there who blame Rahm Emanuel for maintaining a culture of silence and a lack of accountability and a lack of value for, sorry to be cliched, but black life in Chicago, and that he was responsible for the conditions on the night that led up to Jason Van Dyke pulling out his weapon and firing 16 shots.
Sort of like Governor Ryan being responsible for the death of those six people because of the Secretary of State scandal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The same applies to Mayor Lori Lightfoot regarding the death of Adam Toledo and Anthony Alvarez.
I don't think, though, the people who think that the video should have been released before, with the exception of Eric, think that would have been good for Rahm Emanuel. The whole point is that you do things that cost you when they're the right thing to do, and he didn't do that, right? That's sort of at the heart of what
I think. I think that's right.
Okay, so that's, you're right, Eric. That sounds like 4-1 to me. Eric, can we go ahead and make quick pace of the gerrymandering story? Because I think you guys are all pretty good on that one.
I think we can give this one a really quick look, which is that what's happened is that the Democrats have created a political map that looks like it's going to further skew the delegation, the congressional delegation, and probably the delegations and the General Assembly toward the Democrats. And a lot of the reform types and good government types are upset about this. And the Republicans are upset about this. But it looks like it's going to happen. Governor J.B. Pritzker campaigned on the idea that he was not going to sign off on maps that were blatantly partisan, but he is going to do that. And my basic reaction to that is, well, yeah, too bad, so sad, but this is the way politics is played around the country. And that Illinois should not unilaterally disarm the gerrymandering fight. The Democrats in Illinois should not unilaterally disarm. We could lead by example here, but it would be politically suicidal, and it could end up making the difference into who controls the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives next year, if the Democrats were to go along and try to give the Republicans more representation. So the Republicans lost a bit of a court fight this week in that they were seeking to have the procedure put into a nonpartisan commission because they were arguing that the Democrats have missed a timeline. It's kind of a complicated argument, but essentially what we're going to see in the next couple of weeks, I believe, and I'll be outvoted again here, but I believe that the Democrats in the General Assembly are going to pass this. The courts will sign off on it, and Governor Pritzker will sign it, and that's the way it's going to be.
And the result will be that the congressional map in Illinois will favor Democrats, but won't exactly represent the population of Republicans. Is that right?
Yeah, dramatically so. They will have like, what was it, 13-3 or something like that. I don't know the exact numbers.
And what if it was fair, Eric? What if it, and by fair, I mean representative. I wonder what would it look like?
My idea of fair in all these things is that
I know.
If you have 55% Republicans and 45% Democrats, then your legislature should come as close as possible to reflecting that, and your congressional delegation should come as close as possible to reflecting that. You know, that's how the maps ought to be drawn. That'll be my idea of fairness. But if Illinois is going to be fair, then Wisconsin's got to be fair. North Carolina's got to be fair. Texas has got to be fair. These other states that are as grossly gerrymandered as Illinois need to play along too. That Illinois shouldn't just say, well, we're going to play fair, but we don't care that Wisconsin doesn't play fair and these other states don't play fair. So that would be my basic argument here, which is like, you know, this is the way politics is now played. And until we get a national consensus or a Supreme Court ruling on this topic, we need to just say this is the way it is.
Austin, do you agree with Erica on that?
No. This issue is the biggest biggest double standard, in my opinion. If there were, so the effect, it's like, well, we've got the good gerrymandering and the bad gerrymandering. The gerrymandering's the same. It suppresses the vote and is often racist. And that's what it would be called if Republicans were doing this in Illinois. But since Democrats are doing it, even though the NAACP says it disenfranchises Black voters, even though the Mexican American Legal Defense Fund says it disenfranchises Latino voters, this is just gerrymandering and it's part of the political game and we got to respond to Republicans. This is a real problem in Illinois, especially when you have someone like Pritzker going out and saying, I expanded ballot access to historic levels, not like those Neanderthals in Georgia. You get a ballot in the mail, you can vote early. Guess what? It doesn't matter how many ballots you have if you don't have legitimate choice in an election. 50% of our House races over the last decade were uncontested. If I only have one person to vote for, I don't care how easy it is to vote. And it should be described in those terms rather than kind of everybody throws up their hands and they're like, well, you know, Republicans are doing it. So we have
well,
to
we're a
good.
Union. Yeah, of
it's,
states.
It's wrong when Republicans are doing it. And this is really wrong. What's happening in Illinois.
I am kind of interested in if it's going to go this way. I know you want my opinion on, no, it should be fair. And I don't care what the other states are doing. We should try to lead the way, but we're not going to do that. The idea that just because, oh, all the other states aren't playing by the rules, so we're not going to either. I don't find that to be an excuse. I do find it somewhat interesting to think that perhaps the way these districts are drawn, that it would create one district that would maybe put Marie Newman and Adam Kinzinger into some kind of a face-off would be really, really interesting. I think that you'd probably get some decent political debate, some decent policy debate. I'm sort of intrigued by the whole the whole idea of that.
It would be really interesting to see Adam Kinzinger and Murray Newman go against each other. I don't think Kinzinger is going to, I'm Team Heather on this. I don't think Kinzinger is going to survive a Republican primary challenge.
Wow.
But if he were to make it through, that would be a fascinating race.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, by the way, so next week we do the podcast like this via Zoom. Then that'll get us to Wednesday, and then the following Saturday will be October 30th, and that will be when Austin is at a wedding of some friends of his and will not be able to join us, and America will be the lesser for it because he won't be able to join us on our live recording of the Mincing Rascals at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove on Halloween's Eve. Wedding is still on, right?
Wedding's still on. Are you guys going to wear costumes?
No different than the ones that we wear every day. We'll all reconvene here next Wednesday, and then, by the way, sold out, 1,015 seats. Everybody will be masked, and we'll have a swell time on the 30th, and then my friend Thomas Jefferson comes out. I'll probably ask you guys on stage what your favorite Halloween candy is, so you'll want to start thinking about that now. Austin, you'll have to report in early on that one. Because
yeah, I'll send in my vote.
Okay. No, wait, it won't be represented. The map won't show what Austin's candy is. Okay, thank you, Austin. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Okay. See you guys.
Bye. See you, Lisa. Bye.
We are produced by Ashley Byhun and by Aleph Garris. I'm John Williams, and we will drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.